Okay. Good afternoon. So he gave me open topic, which is always a really scary thing for me because I like guidelines to follow. But I did. I had a thought process that I'd used for a Lord's Supper a couple weeks ago. I'm like, let me expand on that a little bit. Forefront of my mind right now is not having my right arm, because it's one of those things you don't realize how much you use your right arm until you don't have it. And then I'm like trying to pick up my phone, and then I feel pain, and it's like, oh, I can't use my right arm for anything. Also learning to write with my left hand, also not a fun thing. Jump with me to 1 Corinthians. First Corinthians chapter 12, and I'm going to start reading in verse 12. 1 Corinthians 12, starting in verse 12. For even as the body is one, and yet has many members, and all the members of the body, though there are many, are one body, so also is Christ. For by one Spirit we were all baptized into one body, whether Jews or Greeks, whether slaves or free, we were all made to drink of one Spirit. For the body is not one member, but many. If the foot should say, because I am not a hand, I am not part of the body, it is not for this reason any less a part of the body. If the ear should say, because I am not an eye, I am not part of the body, it is not for this reason any less a part of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where would the hearing be? And if the whole were hearing, where would the sense of smell be? But now God has placed the members, each one of them, in the body, just as he desired. And there, if they were all one member, where would the body be? But now there are many members, but one body. And the eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of you, or again the head to the feet, I have no need of you. On the contrary, it is much truer that the members of the body, which seem to be weaker, are necessary. And those members of the body, which we deem less honorable, on those we bestow a more abundant honor. And our unseemly members come to have more abundant seemliness. Whereas our seemly members have no need of it. But as God so composed the body, giving more abundant honor to the member which lacked. That there should be no division in the body, but the members should have the same care for one another. And if one member suffers, all members suffer with it. If one member is honored, all the members rejoice with it. Now you are Christ's body and individually members of it. So, my thought process, I had a thought, and it's something that I've played around with for a little bit. An idea that I think correlates really, really well. When we're talking about, be it movies, TV shows, video games, giving accolades, you hear a lot of talk about best actor, best director, but one thing you never hear people ever talk about, unless it's done poorly, is sound design. I'm not talking about score, because everybody, you know, score your music, fine. But sound design, whether it be the sound of a door closing or the wind blowing, is an integral part to making a movie, a TV show, or a video game. You only ever notice it when it's done poorly. And the example here in 1 Corinthians, sorry, the wind is making me turn pages, that in the body, all of the parts are required. There are some things that we realize, whether it be your evangelists or your elders or your general leadership, the people are up there speaking every Sunday. But for me personally, I could not tell you during the summer who cleans the building. I just know it gets done. And it's one of those things that are needed to get done, required, but it's something that you only realize when it's not being done. I bring that up because I think that the example of something like sound design is a good example because, you know, obviously we're all men here, and I encourage, you know, I've grown a lot from Marshall making me do things like public speaking. Far, far, far out of my comfort zone. Very uncomfortable right now, but I've grown a lot doing it, and I think as guys, we should all be pushing ourselves to be more out of our comfort zone, taking on front-facing positions. But an example that I will never, ever, ever forget is my senior year at NYC. Joseph Shanahan had a campfire, and he brought up this example. And for those of you who don't know, we have campfire, and they do little devotions by the campfire in the evening. I know not everybody's been to NYC here. But he brought up the example that in war, if you just have a room full of generals, you're not winning that war. you have levels of leadership all the way down the chain of command that are all required to win the war. A room full of generals isn't going to do anything for you. And like that example has stuck with me because obviously not all of us are going to become evangelists, let's say. We all might do evangelizing, but we might not be the role of the evangelist. I like continually reading in 1 Corinthians 12, starting in 28. And God has appointed in the church first apostles, second prophets, third teachers, then miracles, then gifts of healing, helps, administrations, various kinds of tongues. All are not apostles, are they? All are not prophets, are they? All are not teachers, are they? All are not workers of miracles, are they? All do not have gifts of healing, do they? All do not speak of tongues, do they? All do not interpret, do they? But earnestly desire the greater gifts, and I show you a still more excellent way. Obviously, the spiritual gifts no longer exist, but there's still a principle here that, like, not all of us are going to fill every role. You know, we're not supposed to be filling, like, not all of us are going to be every role. But all of us have a role in the church that we need to fill into. Jumping over to 1 Corinthians 9. So, before I read this, so when we're working and working together, there's still a general unity. You know, one of the things that kind of at the forefront of my mind with everything going on in the country is the lack of unity in our country. You know, a guy can get shot for speaking his opinion. That's really scary, and it shows you where our country is going. But the church, we should have a general sense of unity, working together. And one of the things that I always think of when we think of working together is the same idea, same goal. We have the same goal of seeking and saving the lost. And Paul brings out the example in 1 Corinthians 9, starting in 25. And everybody competes in the game, exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive an imperishable wreath, but we they do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. Therefore, I run in such a way, not without aim. I box in such a way as not being in the air, but I buffet my body and make it my slave, lest possibly, after I preach it to others, I myself should be disqualified. I bring this up because you see in the world, they are going for the perishable wreath, and they can't even have unity for the perishable wreath. We're going for the imperishable. So when we're working in the kingdom, and we're building the church, we should have the unity because we're going for something imperishable. What we're trying to achieve is bigger than, you know, left or right, Republican or Democrat, or any other, you know, fill in the blank there. We are working together to seek and save the lost. Colossians 3:2 tells us to set our mind on things above. When we are working and we are constantly, what is the goal? What is our mind on? It should be very difficult to get off course. Now, obviously, it happens from time to time. I have to be constantly, you know, one of the things I've had to do, you know, I spent 2 weeks at home since breaking my arm because I can't work. I'm like, okay, I need to do something more productive because when I'm just sitting around all day, first of all, it's boring, and second of all, you go crazy really, really quickly. Novelty of TV wears off about after 24 hours. Like, wears off very quickly. And I can't really write because I'm not left-handed at all. You should see my chicken scratch. But I've had to learn, make myself be more productive. And I found things, I'm finding things to make myself be productive. And that's whether or not you have a broken arm. If you yourself aren't helping push forward the kingdom, find ways. There's always ways that you can plug in. Okay, you might not be a mouth, but you could be an arm, you could be a leg, you could help the kingdom in ways that aren't forward facing. I'd still encourage, especially the young men, get out of your comfort zone a little bit, because you don't know if you're the next evangelist or not. But my encouragement to you is that there's a role for you. Find that role, do that role well, and let's work with unity. Thank you. then you're on.
All right, so we're okay. It's live.
Yep, it's live. All right, now.
Thank you.
I haven't started your time, though.
All right, thank you. I appreciate it. Get clipped on. Sorry, I got
zipped. You can even put it in your pocket. It's fine.
Oh. Well, thank you.
Yep. Okay.
Morning, everybody.
Morning.
I have a little thing put together to share with you guys about my time here at On Target and all the things I've experienced talking and seeing the kids. So I remember as a kid going to all the vacation Bible schools and summer camps that there was always workers there that stood out to me. And it was the way they were fun, they were cool, they acted, they stood out. I remember going in and opening the doors, and I remember them standing there greeting you, saying hi. And you go sit down, you see them up on the stage, they're smiling, they're happy. Just gets you going and ready for the day. And now it's really cool that the men's camp is being held here for the past 7 years. Because now I'm a staff member here. I get to see it grow up and things evolve. And now that I'm a staff here, I have the opportunity to have that impact on the kids that come here. I want to be able to put that same positive impact that I see from the staff members that I used to see from me to them. A lot of the kids coming to the camps are public schooled. They may not come from a good environment. They're exposed to things from their phones. They see things, they hear things that aren't usually good or appropriate for their age. Coming here to On Target is probably like a little refreshment and break. We have a little devotion in the middle of the day. We'll talk about Bible stories. And they have to remember it, and if they remember it, they get a piece of candy tomorrow. So, I've taught a few of those devotions to them, and seeing the happiness on their face when they get the piece of candy from remembering who got swallowed by the whale was pretty cool. Now I can see how my attitude, how I carry myself, and how my actions can change the attitude for a kid that comes in here that may be shy or just not really wanting to come to camp in the first place. Like, they don't want to be here. They're walking in. They're just kind of like, they're hiding in the corner. They don't want to talk to anybody. There are many Bible verses that show us the attitude that Jesus had. But one that I want to share with you today isn't directly talking about Jesus, but it's more about how our behavior reflects our wisdom. If you'd like to turn to James 3:13, it's a nice verse that I found. And it reads this. Who among you is wise and understanding? Let him show by his good behavior, his deeds, and his gentleness of wisdom. And then I'm also going to read 17 and 18. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering, without hypocrisy. And the seed whose fruit is righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. I realize that no individual can change another person, but people can influence others. Even though I can influence someone, they have to still make the choice themselves to be influenced, to act differently, to have fun. So I want my influence and behavior to be like the one James is talking about, being able to sow that seed. My influence is like the seed that can be planted in the minds of people. Bad seed is going to produce bad fruit. Good seed is going to produce good fruit. So I want to make sure that my influence plants a good seed in the 140 kids that show up every day for 4 days a week. I've had some kids come in. One, he was on medicine because he was he acted up a lot. So he got really angry once, so I went off and talked to him. He was having a bad time. And after talking to him a little bit, I found out that he really liked rocks. Now, I've loved rocks and minerals since I was 5 or younger, dragging in stones in the house. I'm sure Dad loved it. All over the carpet, shelves were dirty, everywhere. Well, I found out that he liked rocks, and I had this giant geode. It's got a bunch of crystals in it. So I told him I'd bring it tomorrow. I have some for you. So I brought it for him the next day, and his face when he saw the rock was priceless. So he was happy the rest of the day. He was looking at it. And then later the next day, the last day of camp, he came in and he gave me a little piece of rock and a little Pokemon coin. Show his gratitude for the gesture. Completely changed his opinion on camp, and I remember seeing him this year. And that was last year. It was really good. With that short little thing, I know it probably wasn't 10 minutes. I didn't have a lot. But I just want you guys, to encourage you guys to set an example like Jesus is and plant that good seed so we can have the best influence on the people around us. Because kids are kids. They're still very, can be very influenced, even with all the junk that they're absorbing a day in and day out. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
All right. So I picked the topic kind of servitude and leadership. And that's what I'm going to be going over with my 10 minutes this morning. So with that said, let's turn to Matthew 25, 14 through 30. This is one of my favorite parables. I really like when other preachers bring it up and just going over it. And I went over a lot as a kid. I think it was like a good parable for younger kids to learn. And ever since then, I really enjoyed it. So, all right, starting in 14. For the kingdom of heaven is like a man traveling to a far country who has called his own servants and delivered his goods to them. And the one he gave 5 talents, and another 2, and to another to each according to his own ability. And immediately he went on a journey. We're going to stop right there for a sec. But guys, before we become leaders, we have to be servants. And when we're called to be servants for the Lord and leaders for the Lord, we won't be given more than what we can't handle. God gives us exactly what we can do, and he's going to provide the opportunity for us to do it. And we need to be ready when we're called upon. All right, back to verse 16. Then he who had received the 5 talents went and traded with them and made another 5 talents. And likewise, he who had received 2 gained 2 more also. But he who had received 1 went and dug in the ground and hid his Lord's money. After a long time, the Lord of those servants came and settled accounts with them. So he who had received 5 talents and brought 5 other talents, saying, Lord, you have delivered me 5 talents. Look, I have gained 5 more talents besides them. His Lord said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over a few things. I will make you a ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. He also who had received 2 talents came and said, Lord, you delivered to me 2 talents. Look, I have gained 2 more talents besides them. His Lord said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a few things. I will make you a ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. Then he who had received the 1 talent came and said, Lord, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you have not sown, and gathering where you have not scattered seed. And I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Look there, you have what is yours. But the Lord answered and said to him, You wicked and lazy servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sown, and gather where I have not scattered seed. So you ought to have deposited my money with the bankers, and at my coming I would have received back my own with interest. Therefore, take the 1 talent from him and give it to the one who has 10 talents. For to every one who has, more will be given and will have abundance. But from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away. And cast the unprofitable servant into outer darkness, and there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So guys, the Lord provides us the opportunity to serve him. If we don't step up, he'll give it away to somebody else. And we have jobs to do, and we need to do them. Let's turn to 1 Peter 5:2. The nerves are setting in. Spit about leadership here. All right. Shepherds of the flock of God, which is among you, serving as overseers, not by compulsion, but willing, not for dishonest gain, but eagerly. After we have done our time as servants, well, there will be a time coming when we will become, will be time to step up and become leaders, and we'll have to make the way for other servants and whatnot, and for the Lord. Let's turn to Mark 10:45. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. Even the Lord humbled himself enough to be a servant so that he could save the many. And then we have 2 more here. Proverbs 11:14. As I was prepping for this, I saw this and I was like, wow, that is, I've never seen that verse before. I was like, I don't know why it got me so so excited. 11, Proverbs 11:14. Where there is no counsel, the people fall, but the multitude of counselors, there is safety. We guys, our leaders that lead over our churches and our schools and whatnot, they are watching out for us, and we need to trust in them and have because they will help put us on the right path. In closing here, we'll go to Hebrews 13:17. This is probably one of the most important ones. Hebrews 13:17. Obey those who rule over you and be submissive, for they watch out for your souls as those who must give account. Let them do so with joy and not with grief, for that would be unprofitable for you. Your leader, your leaders, they have your best interests at heart, and we need to. They're going to give us the helping hand. We need to follow along and not make the road difficult for them. And when being a servant, it's not just about I need to serve the Lord because it's the right thing to do. There has to be the want to be a good servant. And that's all I have for today. Thank you.
Right, hello. Good morning, everyone. I'll give you a heads up. I chose a lot of verses for this, so especially in the beginning, you might not be able to keep up, especially because I'm also homeschooled, so I read and flip through the Bible very fast. That's okay. Like I said, just for this first part. But seeing that the topics this family camp or for this men's camp were in Deuteronomy, that's where my thoughts were as well. And I kind of noticed this thread throughout the book of Deuteronomy that I thought I'd look into and bring out for you guys. Firstly, if we go to Deuteronomy 1, and we'll start with verse 32. But for all this, you did not trust the Lord your God, who goes before you on your way to seek out a place for you to encamp, in fire by night and cloud by day, to show you in the way in which you should go. Then the Lord heard the sound of your words, and he was angry and took an oath, saying, Not one of these men, this evil generation, shall see the good land in which I swore to give to your fathers, except Caleb the son of Jephunneh. He shall see it, and to him and to his sons I will give to the land on which he has set foot, because he has followed the Lord fully. The Lord was angry with me also on your account, saying, Not even you shall enter there. Joshua, the son of Nun, who stands before you, he shall enter there. Encourage him, before he will cause Israel to inherit it. All right, so that's the first verse I noticed. If you then go to chapter 4, verse 1, which is, Now, O Israel, listen to the statutes and the judgments which I am teaching you to perform, so that you may live and go in and take possession of the land which the Lord, the God of your fathers, is giving you. Then 7, first verses 3 and 4, then verse 12. Furthermore, you shall not intermarry with them, you shall not give your daughters to their sons, nor shall you take their daughters for your sons. For they will turn your sons away from following me to serve other gods, and the anger of the Lord will be kindled against you, and he will quickly destroy you. And in verse 12, then it shall come about, because you listen to these judgments and keep and do them, that the Lord your God will keep with you his covenant and his loving kindness which he swore to your forefathers. Then, last couple, Deuteronomy 28:1. Now it shall be, if you diligently obey the Lord your God, being careful to do all his commandments which I command you today, the Lord your God will set you high above all the nations of the earth. And in 15 of that same chapter, But it shall be, if you do not obey the Lord your God, to observe and to do all his commandments and his statutes with which I charge you today, that all these curses shall come upon you and overtake you. And I believe the last one, the last two, is 30:15. See, I have set before you today life and death, or today life and prosperity and death and adversity. And then Deuteronomy 34:4-5. Then the Lord said to him, "This is the land which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, 'I'll give it to your descendants.' I have let you see it with your eyes, but you shall not go over there." So Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab, according to the word of the Lord. So, if you could, I went pretty fast, but if you could catch sort of the thread I was getting at, interestingly, throughout the book of Deuteronomy, there's this idea of God presenting Israel with a choice. And since this is post that generation, as Mr. Rankin brought up, this is post that generation being denied entrance into the promised land, sort of the repercussions of that choice. And he's giving them, like he said, he's giving them that choice between life and death, like it says in 30 verse 1. And he's saying that really what he desires of them with this choice is righteousness. We see, and this is one everyone can turn to, in Micah 6. If the wind would stop turning my Bible for me. Excuse me. Okay, Micah 6, verses 6 to 8. "With what shall I come to the Lord and bow myself before God on high? Shall I come to him with burnt offerings, with yearling calves? Does the Lord take delight in thousands of rams, in 10,000 rivers of oil? Shall I present my firstborn for my rebellious acts, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? He has told you, O man, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you but to do justice, to love kindness, and to walk humbly with your God?" So, God's saying he desires, what he requires of us is righteousness. And to do, like it says, to do justice, to love kindness, and walk humbly. And that's really, too, here with the Israelites, when we see in Deuteronomy, that's all he's asking of them is righteousness. That same thing, to do justice, to walk humbly, love kindness. And we see in Deuteronomy that they're facing the repercussions of not doing that. Especially we see this with Moses. As it's, we saw in chapter 34, verses 4 and 5, how he's being able to see the promised land, but he's not going to enter into it because of the sin which he committed. We see this not only with the Israelites, but in the world as well, both the claiming to be Christian world and just the greater world out there. Even as it says in Romans 3:23, "For all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God." And we see even more, God desires this righteousness that the world can't attain to. And that this is the focus of everyone in the world. This is where their focus is. Their focus is that we have to reach this level, but we're not going to. Like I said, you see this in the greater world with people, how focused everyone is on depression and anxiety and the brokenness of everything, because you notice that a lot in the news, everyone seems to like to talk about the brokenness. They don't want to talk about how to fix it, just how broken it is. But you even see it in what claims to be the Christian world, this idea that we're still sinners, the world is broken and always will be broken. We're just being dragged along on this path to righteousness. We're not actually able to attain anything. And I think this is part of what the failure for the was for the Israelites here in Deuteronomy, is this focus on not on righteousness, not on doing the right thing, but this focus on where we are, how broken we are, and the physical and what the physical wants. Now this makes sense in the greater world, because they don't have the message we do. Doesn't make sense for the Israelites, because they were given that message. But it at the same time does make sense, because we have an advantage over them, which is the gift of the Holy Spirit. So we're not subject to that same brokenness because we've been killed and resurrected as new men. We've been set free from death and given a new life. And similar to how Moses was shown the promised land but not allowed to enter into it, we haven't just been allowed to enter into it, we've been allowed to build it and made partakers of it. And it's a greater promised land than Moses was even allowed to look at, since we received that gift of the Holy Spirit and made sinless because of our faith. If we look to 1 Peter 2, 21 to 25. Okay. For you have been called for this purpose, since Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example for you to follow in his steps, who committed no sin, nor was any deceit found in his mouth. And while being reviled, he did not revile in return. While suffering, he uttered no threats, but kept entrusting himself to him who judges righteously. And he himself bore our sins in his body on the cross, so that we might die to sin and live to righteousness, for by his wounds you were healed. For you were continually straying like sheep, and now you have returned to the shepherd and guardian of your souls. So that's what... I'll skip through this quickly, but that's what's happened to us, and that's where we've been led to, where we now have this greater blessing than the Israelites have. So now where should our focus be if we're to continue in this blessing? Colossians 3:2, which I won't turn to. Colossians 3:2 goes over how we just set our minds on things above. And this is the encouragement I ask you to draw from Deuteronomy. It's the physical example of where we are. Like I said, remember, Moses was allowed to look into the promised land. We're allowed to go into it and be builders of it and partakers of it. And that's where our focus is to be as we go forward, to remember our new life. And that's all I have for right now.
Morning, everyone. Oh, it's backwards. So, I'm not going to lie. I thought these were in the afternoon. So, I guess a lesson I can learn is, if I'm going to procrastinate, make sure you get the time right. So, we're going to start in Genesis 4. It's been good morning this morning. I had some good conversations. Even last night, I got here a little late. So I sadly missed Ryan and Jason's lessons, so I'm going to definitely go back. I've heard the very good things about those. But very encouraged, very excited for men's camp this year, and hope that I can exhort you guys with this lesson here. So Genesis 4, we're going to start in verse 1. Now the man had relations with his wife Eve, and she conceived and gave birth to Cain. And she said, "I have gotten a man-child with the help of the Lord." And again she gave birth to his brother Abel. And Abel was a keeper of flocks, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. So it came about that in the course of time, Cain brought an offering to the Lord of the fruit of the ground. And Abel, on his part, also brought of the firstlings of his flock and of their fat portions. And the Lord had regard for Abel and for his offering, but for Cain and for his offering he had no regard. So Cain became very angry, and his countenance fell. Then the Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry? Why is your countenance fallen? If you do well, will not your countenance be lifted up? And if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door, and its desire is for you, but you must master it." And we know the rest of the story. Cain goes, tells his brother, rises up against him in the field, and kills him. And for the longest time, like, I had heard of this story, and I kind of just thought, when I was a kid, I was like, you know, this kind of means God likes animals, doesn't like plants, right? Like, animals good, plants bad. And, I mean, that was about the extent of my little kid brain thought of it. Up until probably when I was 15, right about, I was memorizing 1 John. And there's an interesting passage there in 1 John. We'll turn there. 1 John chapter 3. That kind of got me to think a little deeper, like, maybe maybe that's not all there is to this. Maybe there's a little bit more. So 1 John chapter 3. Man, the wind is fighting me. 1 John chapter 3. And we'll start in verse 13. Do not be surprised, brethren, if the world hates you. We know... No, we're not in 13. We're in 11. My bad. For this is the message which you have heard from the beginning, that we should love one another. Not as Cain, who was of the evil one, and slew his brother. And for what reason did he slay him? Why? Because his deeds were evil, but his brother's were righteous. Wait a sec. I thought God just liked the animals, and he wanted animal offerings, and didn't like plants, so he had no regard. But wait, this is saying that Abel's deeds were righteous and Cain's deeds were evil? I mean, they were both giving sacrifices, right? So it kind of caused me to think a little bit more, like, there's more. Maybe it's not just what the sacrifice is, but it's where the heart is, where his mind is. Because, again, even just thinking back to that Genesis 4, it said, what did Abel give? Abel gave of the firstlings and their fat portion. He gave the best to God. And kind of just says Cain gave fruit of the ground. Kind of feels like almost an afterthought. Like, hey, I forgot to think about dinner, so I'm going to throw some chicken nuggets in the air fryer and call it a meal. It's kind of what it feels like. And so it's kind of interesting, so it got me thinking a little bit more about, like, Cain and Abel, and, like, really, who's this Abel guy? Like, we don't really hear about him too much, but I want to turn to Hebrews 11. Hebrews 11. We're going to start in verse 1. Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. For by it, the men of old gained approval. By faith, we understand the worlds were prepared by the word of God, so that what is seen was not made out of things which are visible. By faith, Abel offered to God a better sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained the testimony that he was righteous, God testifying about his gifts, and through faith, though he is dead, he still speaks. Abel gave a better offering. It's not that God likes animals more than plants. That's not really what it's about. Abel was willing to give the best. He was giving the firstlings, the fat portions. Cain, he's just giving of the plants. And it says there that by his sacrifice, by Abel's sacrifice, he obtained the testimony that he was righteous. And we'll turn over real quick to Matthew 23 as well. Because even Jesus brings this up. So here we got Jesus talking to the scribes and Pharisees. We'll start in 29 of chapter 23. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you build the tombs of the prophets and adorn the monuments of the righteous, and say, if we had been living in the days of our fathers, we would not have been partners with them in shedding the blood of the prophets. So you testify against yourselves that you are sons of those who murdered the prophets. Fill up, then, the measure of the guilt of your fathers. You serpents, you brood of vipers, how will you escape the sentence of hell? Therefore, behold, I am sending you prophets and wise men and scribes. Some of them you will kill and crucify, and some of them you will scourge in your synagogues and persecute from city to city, so that upon you may fall the guilt of all the righteous blood shed on the earth, from the blood of righteous Abel to the blood of Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, whom you murdered between the temple and the altar. Truly, I say to you, all these things will come upon this generation. Side note, Eric talked about that, coming upon this generation. Messiah, or Christ, whom you crucified. The guilt of all the righteous was upon them there at Pentecost. But even Jesus' assessment here, Abel was righteous. The blood of righteous Abel. We saw there he obtained the testimony that he was righteous by his sacrifice. And it's not only that, this is what I was kind of finding very interesting in thinking and talking about this, was that not only was Abel a righteous man, by all accounts, he was probably the first righteous man. Because it certainly wasn't Adam. You look at 1 Corinthians 15, I don't think Adam followed God's plan. I don't think he repented. But again, so Abel, this guy is significant. He's the first one to follow after and seek God. And it was kind of cool to me. But again, like what's the application? What's the point? Well, flip back a little bit to Matthew 16. Because it's a cool little thing to know. Sure, like, okay, Abel's the first righteous guy, but how does that affect us thousands of years later? Like, Hebrews did talk that even though he's dead, his blood still speaks. And you also look in Hebrews, whose blood speaks higher than the blood of Abel, better than the blood of Abel. But here's some application we can derive. Matthew 16:24. Then Jesus said to his disciples, "If anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself. Take up his cross and follow me. For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world but forfeits his soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? For the Son of Man is going to come in the glory of his Father with his angels, and will then repay every man according to his deed. Truly I say to you, there are some of those who are standing here who will not taste death until they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom." I really want to get at the first point, or the first section there, that Jesus is like, hey, if you want to follow me, you got to deny yourself. It's going to cost you. You're going to have to make sacrifices. You're going to have to sacrifice. And not only that, I kind of think of it a lot of times like, sorry, let me backpedal. Abel gave the firstlings, right? The first, the best. And I kind of always think about it in the context of like tithe. Is like, okay, you take 10% before you all your expenses. So like before rent comes out, before utilities, before taxes. Yeah, right. And it's like you take off the top. You don't pay all your stuff and then be like, okay, well, I've got a couple hundred bucks left for this month, so we'll toss a 20 in there. It's kind of like you don't do that. Like if your heart's after him, but again, this doesn't only apply to that. It applies to everything. Because money is not our only resource. We got time, our abilities, what we learn, what we spend our time doing, what we spend our time performing, that's in service of the King. And I think that's what we can gain from Abel, is that give your best. Give of your first fruits and do your best for him. Thank you.
Morning. I don't often get to say good morning because we meet in the afternoon in Lima, so it's always a privilege to say good morning. I resonated, Tony, you mentioned, you know, if you're going to procrastinate, know the time. I, you always think you have more time than you do until you don't. And it usually works that way with lessons and sermons and Lord's Suppers and sometimes with shotguns too. All of a sudden you don't have any time left and you hope what you got was good enough. But I've definitely been encouraged by the thoughts and just even getting to hear some of these young guys, seeing them come up. Not that I'm a whole lot older than they are, but it's just cool to see guys who are on fire who are convicted, who are really pouring in and spending time to bring messages of truth and of scriptural basis. So I've been greatly encouraged by that. But something I wanted to bring out in my few minutes that I have with you this morning here, I've had the opportunity recently to have a little bit of discussion with a family member of mine who believes very differently from I. He and I were raised the same, you know, within the same parents. But as we got older and I guess took our steps into our young adult life, he and I have made very, very different choices and are on very different sides of worldview and conviction. And in addition to that, I've had the opportunity with a couple guys from our assembly, Andy and Bob, to meet with a group of guys from another congregation and just have spiritual conversation with these guys who, you know, we're reading the same Bible and drawing very, very different conclusions and drawing very different, understandings from what it's being said or what we're reading. And so I'm wrestling with this principle of how to reach out to people like this who either are not spiritually minded at all or who are spiritually minded, but seem to read the same thing and have a completely different perspective from what we do. And if I was to title the few minutes that I have up here with you, it would be plain and simple. I think the message of the gospel, the things that we need to know, the conviction that we need to have for what is required of us to get into the kingdom and to win souls for the kingdom, those things are plain and simple. God is not trying to confuse us. He's not trying to make it muddy or muddy the waters for us when it comes to these principles. There are things in Scripture that we can dive into, that we can discuss, things that I don't even quite understand, that we, as we grow, right, as we continue to, work out your salvation with fear and trembling, that's a maturing process. But what we need to get in and to stay in is plain and simple. That is not confusing. That is not hard to understand. So turn with me to Matthew 7. I'm going to be reading a snippet of verses here, starting in verses 24, reading through verses 27 there, out of Matthew 7. Jesus has been speaking. We know this section of Scripture. It starts in chapter 5, goes through chapter 6, and kind of rounds out in chapter 7. It's a very long sermon, one that I think Marshall will bring to us tomorrow morning, very long and you know, multiple hours. We're all looking forward to that. So I appreciate, though, what Jesus is doing is he's giving them a whole lot of information. There's a lot here for these guys to unpack. And here kind of at the end of it, in verse 24 through 27, he says, "Therefore, whoever hears these things, sayings of mine and does them, I will liken him to the wise man who builds his house on the rock. And the rain descended and the floods came and the winds blew and beat on that house, and it did not fall, for it was founded on the rock. But everyone who hears these sayings of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who builds his house on the sand. And the rain descended, the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on the house, and it fell, and great was its fall." Go with me to Luke 8. Luke 8, starting in verse 4. "And then a great multitude gathered, and they had come to him from every city. He spoke by a parable. A sower went out to sow his seed, and he sowed. Some fell by the wayside, and it was trampled, and the birds of the air devoured it. Some fell on rock, and as soon as it sprang up, it withered away because it lacked moisture. And some fell among thorns, and the thorns sprang up with it and choked it. But others fell on good ground, sprang up, and yielded a crop 100-fold. And when he had said these things, he cried, 'He who has ears to hear, let him hear.'" If we go back to Matthew 13, there's another reference after Jesus is speaking. It's the same parable of the sower we just read in Luke 8, just at the end of that, in verse 43, I apologize, at the end of the parable of the tares. Matthew 13, verse 43, Jesus has finished the parable. He says, "Then the righteous shall shine forth as the sun in the kingdom of their Father. He who has ears to hear, let him hear." Ultimately, you know, we see a few different passages where Jesus is done telling a parable, His disciples come up to him and they're like, we have no idea what you just said. Like, what was that about? So is Jesus trying to confuse the crowds who are listening? Is he trying to confuse those who didn't have the opportunity to come right up to him afterwards like the disciples did to ask him what he meant by those things? Not at all. Jesus is appealing to those who are seeking truth. Jesus is appealing to those who actually want to know what he's talking about. I know from personal experience I've had this happen to me, and maybe if I'm telling on myself, a few of you all can relate to this. You ever listen to somebody, you've been in a conversation and it's going pretty well, and you know they've been talking for a minute or two, you're not really sure how long, and you realize you have no idea what they just said. You know, maybe 60 seconds after they started speaking. I've heard it likened to, you know, if you're a long busy day, you're driving home and you pull into your driveway and you're like, you have no idea how you got home, the turns you took, you know, the lights or the stops along the way. You just found your way home and there you are, right? We just kind of clock out sometimes. And we do that in conversation too. And I think Jesus realizes that. You know, he was made in likeness like we are in all things. So he understood human limitations, being tired. He also understood lack of humility, not seeking truth, people not being interested. And so I think he's aware when he tells these parables and when he tells people, you know, you who have ears, this is for you to hear. People who are interested are going to find out what I'm talking about, because I'm not complicating this. I'm not making it hard to understand. I'm simply seeking those who are seeking me. If we go back to Luke 8, we just finished up the parable of the sower there. I'm going to read a few chunk of verses there at the end, 11 through 15. Luke 8, starting in verse 11. Now the parable is this. The seed is the word of God. Those by the wayside are the ones who hear. Then the devil comes and takes away the word out of their hearts, lest they should believe and be saved. But the ones on the rock are those who, when they hear, receive the word with joy. And these have no root, who believe for a while, and in a time of temptation, fall away. Now the ones fell among thorns are those who, when they have heard, go out and are choked with cares, riches, and pleasures of life, and bring no fruit to maturity. But the ones that fell on the good ground are those who, having heard the word with a noble and good heart, keep it and bear fruit with patience. The point I'm trying to get at, with plain and simple, whether it be family members, co-workers, you know, brothers and sisters in the church even that we're having discourse with, and even those who are maybe assembling somewhere else, who have spirituality and who believe in God and yet seem to draw a very different conclusion from what we read. It's not a complicated truth that we need, that we have. It's not a hard thing to understand the simplicities of finding Christ, knowing the truth, and being rooted in it, and bearing fruit, as we see in that parable. And that's Jesus' appeal to those who have a good and noble, or a good and honest heart, who want to seek, who want to find, because to those who are hearing, they will hear. To those who are seeking, they will find, they'll knock and the door will be opened. But the burden is on us as individuals to not only be those as an example, first and foremost, but to understand that it's not a hard thing that we're doing. It's not a difficult thing to take the truth of the gospel. And ultimately, our burden is not one to make people believe, but to rather throw the seed and allow the simplicity and the truth of that to convict their hearts and allow God to do his work as we participate in that work with him. Thank you.